This is CliffCentral.com.
All right. We were just talking about Justin Timberlake and how he's old now. I mean, it happens to everybody, but he used to be cool. Like, he used to be the fun guy. Don't you think, Mubs? Like, he's old now.
Well, you know, everybody has an expiration date.
He's settled down. He's married. I don't think he's expired, but everything's changed. He's not the cool kid he used to be.
Mm-mm. Also, people move on. You know, they're new people for us to obsess over now.
Right. Absolutely. All right. Speaking of people we want to obsess over, well, certainly we want to catch up with this guy. I haven't seen him in ages. You're still looking good.
Am I?
Well, you don't look any older.
You do, though.
Fuck you.
It's the stress from running this major corporation. You know, if
major
if you wanted to catch up with me, you could have just called me or WhatsApp.
That's
or
true.
Something.
I'm totally anti-social.
Good morning,
you're exactly right. Actually, you're good. That's a good point. It's like those people who see each other at school reunions. They're like, "It's so good to see you," and you're like, "I live in the same house."
Yeah,
you could have pitched up.
He's overcompensating, really, by putting me as a guest on your show.
No, I'm not. I did want to catch up with you because you're doing amazing things. Your career is interesting, and I think you've done some cool stuff since I last saw you, which was ages ago. You good?
I'm good. In fact, remember that last conversation we had?
No.
You don't, eh? You're in the moment, and then you're gone.
I don't even know what I did last Thursday.
I told Sia.
What happened? What was our last conversation?
We were sitting at lunch, and it was an anniversary of the radio station we used to work for.
702, yeah?
702.
All those years ago, yeah?
And the event got a little bit boring. We popped over to the other side of the street. I think it was you, me, Tseko Morisa,
Tabo Morisa. We got out of there. Alan Ford.
And Bacher.
And we went across the road. We left the celebration?
Yeah, we did.
Wow.
Aki popped in and then you was across the road again.
And so we basically rejected the...
If an event is boring, you have the right
to
walk out.
That's a really rebellious move because everyone else would have been, you know, that we would have been conspicuous by our absence. Weren't we doing the morning show?
We were pretty much always conspicuous in that building, weren't we? But the last words that I said to you...
What were they?
And that's what stands out for me is that you need Jesus.
Did you say that?
I said that after a 40-minute conversation.
You still
about,
believe that?
Yes.
Okay.
Very much so.
I'll work on it. I gotta get my head right. So Udo Carl, sir.
Yes, sir.
You've done a lot of interesting stuff. I watched how you started becoming very serious and important. You were like a news editor. No, you were a news editor for a while.
Yeah, yeah.
And you started off in sports, so I knew that was something that you loved. But being the news editor is a whole different ball game.
It absolutely is. But you know what?
You got married. You got divorced. Right, you got
married, divorced, married again, divorced again.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Life has been exciting.
It just means that after all this time, I still haven't worked out relationships, man.
Don't worry. I'm still trying to find Jesus. Who is?
but yeah. So the question about being a news editor.
Yeah. Well, I just wanted to know if while you were in that role, because it's a very serious role and you've got major responsibilities, you know, particularly at that time when radio was, you know, one of the only games in town and people used the radio news to inform themselves.
I don't know if you'll remember, but just at that time, about 3 months after I started at YFM as news and information editor, the Jacob Zuma rape trial began. The Kwezi case started.
Right.
And it was a very important time in my career because as a young editor, first time out, with a very inexperienced newsroom at a place like YFM, how do you manage those sorts of relationships? How do you manage that story?
And you must have been, what, early 20s, late 20s?
Sort of round about there, yeah.
Yeah, that's a young age to have all that responsibility. So the reason it's hard is because you have to then carry across the important salient information to an audience.
Yeah.
And in those days, we didn't have Twitter.
But also make it digestible and understandable to the audience that you're speaking to, because news is not news all over the world.
No, and there is no such thing as objectivity either, but you've got to try. That's what we aim for. And there wasn't a social media like there is now.
No.
For you to corroborate facts or for people to decide who they were going to follow themselves. So it was tremendously
social
important.
Media is that bastion of truth, isn't it?
No, it's not. It's exactly the opposite, but at least you get a variety of different sources and opinions, and somewhere in the middle you can figure out more or less where the truth lies.
And I think that's the awesome responsibility if you're working in news, is that your filter's got to be right. Your sense of story has got to be right. Your framework of analysis has got to be deeper than just picking a view and sticking to it, if you know what I mean. If you're really going to rely on social media as that thing that helps you to find the truth, as it were.
You're in trouble because those editors used to do that work for you.
Right. That's a dangerous process. Yeah,
and they would eliminate the nutcases and the screaming, hollering madness from the equation and give you as much of the sensible, objective, well-researched, factual truth as they could possibly find, with a little bit of opinion thrown in as well. Did you find that job onerous or did you love it?
I loved it from the point of view of, and I've always loved crafting story. So I've loved it from the point of view of sitting in the middle of 6-7 really young, talented people and sort of through my experience imparting the skill of what is the story in that entire mix.
Were you a good boss?
No, I was terrible. And that experience, as much as I loved the process, as much as I loved putting stories out there and informing people, it informed me of one thing, like management, never going to happen.
Not for you.
If I'm managing my own projects and I need to manage the people within that space, happiness. But if I'm responsible for an entire department, I can't think of anything more boring.
Boring.
You know what it is.
Boring and there's not really a reward.
Besides that, like how many times do you have to tell people what to do and then they don't do it in the way that you like doing it before you realize like this is an inane exercise.
Mm-hmm.
So there are people I think who are born for leading great corporations like yourself. And then there's, you know what I mean.
Yeah, all right.
And then there's me. I live and die by the story.
But that's terrific because if you get anywhere in life where you know yourself better and you know your own strengths and weaknesses, that's a good place to be.
Yeah. You know what pushed me over the edge?
What?
Besides the news editing stuff at YFM, I was also sort of part of the program's management team.
Oh.
And I rock up at work the one morning. And I'm called into a very serious meeting. Like, listen, you got to go and have a chat with one of our DJs.
Aye, aye, aye.
I'm like, yeah? He's like, no, there was an incident this weekend that has sort of put us in a bad light. I'm like, okay, explain what happened. And it turns out one of our DJs was at a gig.
Yeah.
Playing out in Midrand somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Promoter didn't pay him.
Yeah.
So the dude goes straight to the promoter, pulls him to the DJ box in front of everybody, whips it out, and urinated on the promoter. Now, this is a Monday morning, and I got to tell the dude who stood up for his money and his rights, you did wrong.
Well, he did. Like, he peed all over
the was my hero. He was an absolute hero. That's how you do it. That's how you get your
conflict
money
of interests.
I don't know about conflict of interest, but the point is.
Did you have to? You told.
No, I left it. I was like, guy, you did the right thing. Dude should have paid you. You did the right thing. And in that moment, I realized, like,
management's not
organizational
for you.
Culture.
Mm.
Yeah, I'm not a tower of the line, I suppose.
Yeah, I think there's a rebellious streak in a lot of interesting and successful people, and people who've moved in different directions from the herd.
Mm.
And that rebellious streak can be powerful, but it can also be self-destructive. Like for some people, it prevents them from getting to where they want to be a lot of the time. You got there and then decided,
not rebellion for rebellion's sake because you're going to run out of gas. You're going to run out of ideas. You're going to run out of buttons to push.
Yeah.
It's got to be true. It's got to be sincere.
Did you know you wanted to be in media early on?
Well, if my early years of sitting in front of an old Blaupunkt hi-fi, dubbing music and pretending to be a DJ is anything to go by, I suppose,
I think
yeah.
So.
And I remember how I landed up in, I loved the world of academia, needed to find a job.
You studied in the Cape, you did
UCT.
Administration.
Public administration, right. Philosophy, you remembered well that.
Public administration.
Yeah. I was going to be a spin doctor.
Jesus. You imagine, my buddy. Huh?
Oh, well.
Hello, it's Udo. I'm here to tell you the good things about Batabile Dlamini.
You've got 3 minutes. Go.
Can I have 30 seconds?
Great lady. Fantastic.
Yeah,
that's
there we
difficulty,
go. That's it.
Delivering.
To her liver.
Delivering.
Oh. Sorry, I heard something else.
Mantle.
All right. So, no, well, Manta was a whole other story. We don't need to go into that. But I mean, this is now 20 years down the line.
And that's the staggering thing.
In the media business. Have you done the things that you wanted to do? I mean, all those dreams you had when you were playing around at the Blaupunkt Hi-Fi.
Yeah.
I mean, were these things that you expected?
I've
better
played,
or worse?
I've played in fantastic spaces.
Mm-hmm.
I've enjoyed the ride tremendously. I've learned a lot about this industry. I've learned that if you make yourself indispensable to a process or an organization, you're going to have longevity. If you know what you can bring,
yeah,
you're going to have longevity, irrespective of the job that you're in. In terms of then sort of bulldozing ahead with my own ideas, my own claiming my own space, I think that's a process that's still under construction, if you know what I mean.
What about the component that has to do with doing the live stuff, being the front man, not being in the back office trying to make things happen or managing people or trying to herd cats?
Mm.
I mean, that live stuff where you're doing the sports show and Metro, well, after Robert Morales.
Yeah, that's, I suppose, what we live for.
Mm.
Whether you're doing business or sport or politics, whatever the case may be, if you're in the space where you're having a daily conversation, that's heaven, man. Because you can have all sorts of ideas about how your day is going to start out and what you've got planned for the day.
Mm-hmm.
But free choice, thank heavens, will always enter itself into that fray, will always surprise you because you're dealing with people.
Yeah.
So for me.
But it's also very unpredictable.
Well, this is just it.
I mean, not in a good way sometimes.
When is it in a bad way? When is unpredictability bad?
Well, sometimes, I mean, a lot of people like routine. And a lot of people like to have some idea of what's
up. I'm
a
Gemini guy.
And so you're okay with
that. I'm colored.
Yeah, so you're okay with it.
So indecisiveness comes with the territory. Yeah, there's the fence, both sides all the time. So I've always been a little bit schizo.
Yeah.
Which means that unpredictability, you thrive on it. It's just that turn in the road that you weren't expecting, and now you're on that road. That's what you live for, man.
I think that there's also an element of kind of knowing things could go horribly wrong that keeps you on your toes.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you're in a live situation and you're talking to someone and you know that there are a lot of people listening and it could all unwind very badly for that person or for you.
Yeah.
If the interview goes wrong, it really gets you focused.
Isn't that the moment where authenticity is tested? I'll give you an example.
Yeah.
A couple of weeks ago, about four or five weeks ago, you know Danny Jordan and the whole SAFA presidency thing that's happening at the moment.
Yes.
So I do an interview with Ace Noble, the guy who is intent on getting me out of that office.
Right.
And just like most interviews, you'll have a bit of a pre-chat with the guy that you're talking to. And it's not like you are setting a game plan, but you're just giving the dude a heads up to say, listen, what are we talking about today? What do you want to say? He then comes on air and begins to slam the platform that I'm working for. Because we have not secured an interview with Danny Jordan at the same time. Now there are all sorts of reasons for it, but in the time that he goes off, I let him. You sit back. You let him speak. Let him have his
rant.
Feelings out. You let him have his rant.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of it, if I wasn't authentic in terms of why I was speaking to him and not to the other guy, if that wasn't an authentic space, the listeners would have looked at it and gone, okay, but now you're not acting ethically.
Or that this is propaganda.
But you get what I'm saying.
But let me understand. So, yeah. Because I don't know the first thing about who knows how SAFA works. Ivan Khoza, maybe.
From that big soccer ball in Nazareth, yeah.
Nobody knows.
Mm.
But Danny Jordan has got a lot of problems.
Plenty.
Right? I mean, the guy, if he leaves the country, could be arrested in certain places. I see Jennifer Ferguson has come back and accused him of rape. There's a whole lot of ugliness going on in this guy's life. He was mayor of PE for a while. Mm. Clearly the ANC have lost PE, probably because of him, if not in spite of him. They want to take him out, and this Ace Nobo wants to take over. Is that what's going on?
Look, both of them.
What is going on there?
And we've got the luxury of time here, but both of them are ANC cadres.
Yes.
Strong roots in the ANC. Their notion of leadership is, I will stand and lead when called upon. They both have the same philosophy.
It's that bullshit.
Right? And then once you're in, then it's not up to outside forces to get rid of me in that leadership position. So if you're asking me whether Ace Norbert wants to be the president of SAFA, maybe. But in the public space, whenever there's a debate, whenever there's a conversation, he will go back to that leadership principle of I will stand when called upon.
Which is there not a are people who support that's me. Not a leadership
if,
principle.
Yeah, yeah. If the principles that you're standing on are so important that somebody has to leave an office, then for maybe you should be maybe you should be brave enough and say, well, actually, I'm better for this organization. Off the bat.
Yeah.
Out in public. And stand up for
that. Do you think he would be better? What's the state of health at SAFA? I mean, would you want to lead SAFA if I said to you, I need someone to run SAFA and you're the guy. We're going to deploy you.
Would you like to executive produce Bhavana Bhavana? Right?
No. Not
so
a
in
chance.
So in a nutshell, no.
It's a mess, right?
It's a mess.
But there's huge.
It's a mess at the highest level. We look at age group teams coming through and qualifying for World Cups. We look at what our Banyana team has just done now. And this is a team who was without a permanent coach for the longest while because SAFA was sort of just going like, we're still chatting to an Italian lady and an American lady, but in the meantime, just be a national team.
It's like there's no one at the wheel.
Well, this is it. And as much as their success lower down, you and I both know, everybody in the room knows, unless Bafana is doing well, everybody's going to look at SAFA and go, but it's a mess. And the reason why they are in a mess is because you're a mess.
Well, there's huge money there.
It's massive.
It's a huge business. We're talking millionaires that are at the top of this structure. People like Ivan Kwasa, who, you know, people don't call him the Iron Duke for nothing. And the guy has a stranglehold on so much of what goes on in football.
But the global footprint or the global model for football has so much skullduggery in it.
Yes.
FIFA. I mean, if you're going as a SAFA representative, for instance, to a FIFA meeting, paid for, first class, now you arrive in Zurich, there you're sitting at the meeting, and you're having conversations with people who will tell you how that blueprint works to the benefit of individuals.
Yeah.
Well, what are you going to do? Stand there and go, no, this is wrong. This must be changed.
You're going to go along with it because you're
going to work within that system.
Sure, and you make some money.
Yeah.
Is there a way to fix it? Is there a will to?
Yes. You see, what we need to understand is globally, when we look at sport, every single global organization runs on this principle that we are almost a sovereign state. FIFA is sovereign. The IOC is sovereign. The IAAF is sovereign. And therefore, individual governments, as much as their intentions might be good to change and improve these things, should not meddle in those affairs. I went to a meeting of the world's sports ministers in 2013 in Germany. And I sat in this room. And these are the most powerful people from a government point of view in sport. And and it's a UN conference that I went to, right? And the resolutions that they came up with, I mean, top of the list was you cannot demand of a third world country to put in its bid book for any global tournament, any global event, the same expectations that you would have of a Germany or a France or a USA if they are bidding. In other words, the cost of games, whether it's the World Cup or the IAAF World Championships of Athletics or the Olympic Games, it needs to be cheaper. The model needs to be relooked.
Yeah.
And that was at the top of the list. The second resolution that they took was where governments find corruption, where governments find wrongdoing in sport, governments should be allowed to step in. Remember, not too long ago.
Yeah.
Fikile Mbalula wanted this commission of inquiry. No, they haven't. We've got a ministerial committee now that's been looking into a stampede death, that's been looking into how the umbrella body of South African sports, SASCOC, is being run. Does it have the full might of the law? Can it subpoena people to come and testify? No, it can't. You can basically tell them to sod off, and then it becomes a legal process. So have governments really begun intervening? No.
Do we necessarily? I mean, it's funny how government, they seem to have this almost hands-off approach to, as long as they can put a couple of deployed cadres in the right places, and almost it's almost like a retirement package for some guys.
But isn't it
like, well, we give you this job, you get paid a salary to go to a meeting to talk about sport.
It's ridiculous. Isn't it the same with everything in life? an organization, an institution grows, not organically, but because somebody has the intention of creating something, mm-hmm. whether it's Cliff Central mm-hmm. or the South African Football Association. And then once you've sort of put your stamp on what you want to do, you find yourself in a global environment where status quo is what's the most important thing. For you to play with the other boys, other girls, you play within a culture, you play within a system.
And so that's that old line of, on the eve of the revolution, the greatest radical becomes a conservative.
Amen.
Amen. They want to keep the system in place because it can benefit them. It's the people's game when we're talking about soccer. We always talk about, but in South Africa, this is the game that most people.
It is not.
So it's owned.
I've been doing sport now for what, 20 odd years? Radio and television. And I'd like to think that everything that I've conceptualized, done, executed on air, on television, in front or behind the camera, is based on the average South African owns the team that they support. The average South African owns the national teams. I've had conversations long enough with average South Africans now to know.
They don't.
It's not the case.
Jesus.
I've had enough conversations to know that people get so frustrated that they reach the tipping point where they eventually go like, you know what, actually, fuck you.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look at what happened with Pirates just this week. There's that two-match ban.
But 2-3 wins in a row later, Bafana qualifying for something later, we're standing there like Kippy again, saying, slap me again.
It's a toxic relationship.
Of course
right?
It is. When money's involved, we're always going to head there.
Mm. And there's so much skullduggery, as you say, built into the system. I mean, we just have to look at what Sepp Blatter and those guys got up to.
That dude basically was running FIFA by edict.
Mm. Like a dictator.
I feel like having a 50th birthday party somewhere in Mauritius. Let's fly 6,000 people out there now. And he could do that. Without explanation, without accountability, he literally could do that. Somebody would process the paperwork, you'll sign off, there
Can
we go.
Can you imagine?
Everybody off to Mauritius for his 50th.
Imagine.
Which feels like it was 40 years ago.
So how do you feel about the world being in, is it Russia this year?
I knew there was going to be a reaction.
What do you think of this?
Look, firstly, if status quo is what keeps the world going, And every 4 years we have this false sense of excitement because our team's involved in a World Cup, mm-hmm. right? And that is the fan process. Just explain to you now. I hate this. I hate this. I hate this. Damn, my national team's playing. I love this.
Yeah, of course, let's just throw in the proviso. Yeah, this year we don't have a team there. But that's
we know this. How are you going to stand in the way of people getting excited? So number one, Russia's got it. They weren't meant to have it.
Yeah.
The World Cup after that, they weren't meant to have it, but they're going to have it.
Yeah.
How are you going to stop that process?
Yeah, either you jump in and enjoy the World Cup, or you complain about it in the sidelines and boycott
it. It's the same when Philip arrived. We all know the FIFA arguments. We all know the debates. We all know what's been happening inside that organization, and heaven forbid it's still exactly the same as 8 years ago now.
Of course it is.
Right? We all know that. But when Philip arrived, Archbishop Desmond Tutu got drunk on the stage with Lucas Radebe.
Yeah, you remember that.
You get what I'm saying? So if these...
Does it take the joy out of sport?
No, it doesn't. Because at the end of the day, we're talking about that unpredictability again. Unless it's like a Hansi fix. There's every chance that sport will still surprise you. And that's why we love sport. There's every chance that two teams can go onto a field... The form book can say this team is going to lose 5-0. And then they win 4-3. And that's why we love sport. This the summer series of cricket. My God. South Africa and Australia. We played India, beat them in a home series. India's supposed to be the number one team in the world. But we know the way that our sports brains function as South Africans, it's Australia that we want to beat.
Yeah.
So you go into the series against the team that's not the number one in the world. You've just beaten the number one in the world. That's the most exciting series. Could we have foreseen what that series
would
turn into?
Ben was saying every day that this was the gift that kept on giving.
Hallelujah. And we'll continue to do so.
It wasn't even on-field
summer
stuff.
Series has destroyed at least three international careers, including the best test batsman in the world, bar none. This one series. And it all started with somebody's wife.
Sledging, yeah.
Sledging. From words, we saw the actions. And now we see the repercussions. And don't pretend for 1 second there was only that one game.
Yeah.
Where they were ball tampering.
And people who don't care about cricket.
You saw David Warner's welding glove in the previous test in PE. You saw what that dude had in his hand.
People who didn't watch cricket and didn't care about cricket started taking an interest.
Really?
Yeah, it became a thing.
See, people, I'm so immersed in that fan experience that sort of above the club.
And you guys, know what I mean? you sports guys, Ben. I live in a different world. I don't care about who wins and loses this weekend.
Like
I don't.
My dad.
Yeah, is your dad like that?
I've got a mom who I can phone now to find out who's playing in the next 2 weeks. And then a dad who walks into the room while we're watching sport purely to be spiteful. I was down in Cape Town for some athletics work. And then after that, United were playing Man City.
Mm-hmm.
So they're down at halftime. And my dad walks in. He doesn't give two fs about any sports team. And he sort of walks into the room and he just smiles at us. And I starts messing with the TV. And it's my mom, my brother, and myself. It's like, dude, just leave. United scored in the second half. They went on to win the game. Dude was silent for the whole night. So you're very much like my dad.
He didn't care.
Hates sports, but he knows how to use it to push buttons.
Well, I don't hate it, but I think that a lot of people, because so much of it is, and it, particularly when you talk Premier League in this country, a lot of it's so humdrum. Draws.
Yeah, but they draws all over the world.
Yeah,
look
but
at
I mean,
any league.
Come on. Like all the derbies that they hype up to be these big deals, nothing ever happens. It's very much a letdown for all those people. And you think about people who are spending like hard-earned money. Mm. And I'm talking about hard-earned money, working in mines and stuff like that. And that this is their thing for the week. They want to see one goal.
They come away
from that field and they're like,
this is where I'm going to disagree with you subtly.
Okay.
A.
Explain it.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm an idiot about
Your link into football is a perceived one on behalf of these masses.
Yeah, sure, which I have no...
Yeah,
no
you know what I mean, who hate coming from a 0-0 draw.
They don't.
My experience is one of engaging with those people on a daily basis.
And they don't mind.
Well, this is it. There will be games that are boring.
Mm-hmm.
There will be games that are exciting. The point is, if the average fan still defines themselves by virtue of, it's in my DNA, I'm going to debate about it every single day, I'm going to guara the first Chiefs fan that I see because I'm a Pirates fan. It's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful... We can debate about the quality of football that's being played, yeah? The one thing I will say is that the quality of play in South Africa leaves a lot to be desired.
Mm.
2010 was the biggest blessing, but also the biggest curse for South African football. And I'll tell you why. Let me go back a little bit further. When we won the AFCON tournament was at the wrong time for South African football because it gave us a sense that post isolation, we can play this game.
Yeah, we're good. We're
as good as Brazil.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. And that mentality still being there because at our first attempt, we won the Africa Cup of Nations.
Right.
So now you live in the sterilized, because SAFA keeps telling you how great you are until you can't qualify for things and then you're terrible and then the ministers tell you what a bunch of losers you are.
Yeah.
But we live in this in environment where we think we are better than we actually are at something.
Huh.
And what falls by the wayside? The actual processes that keeps you as good as you are and takes you to as good as you possibly can be.
In fact,
and
I think we've lost worse.
And I think we've lost sight of that. What 2010 did directly.
Yeah.
And you saw players come from all over the world to play back in the league here. Is it generated so much money around the league in South Africa where we kept being told that we are the fifth biggest league in the world?
Yeah.
What metrics they use, that's debatable. But it's created a situation where an Itumeleng Nkune can earn across his career and live like a king in South Africa. Mm-hmm. When what football actually demands of him is to find a great contract with a great team abroad. And if that happens to the nucleus of your national team, people are going to be chilling back in South Africa thinking, I've made it.
Take the easy road.
Yeah.
What's the hardest job you've had? mean, you've done so many varied things. You've worked for so many different businesses.
I got to say that the time working with you was the cuckest.
Yeah.
But also the most beautiful.
No, I totally understand.
Let me tell you what, just by, you guys work with him every single day, right?
Yeah.
So, so up until the point that I'm working with him directly on a show, I'm doing sports presenting, but also hard news. So I get introduced to this bugger and they're like, okay, you're going to start producing for him. I'm like, cool. I was pulling maybe 12, 14 hour a day to do my shit and to put his show together. The very first show we did together, he walks in 5 minutes before the start of the show, having not answered my calls the day before. See, I've struck a chord here. Dude walks in. I'm like, Gareth, here's the running order for the morning. And he literally looks at it. He goes, yeah. Great. In the bin.
Wow.
In the bin. And I'm like, but my guy, I've committed to people for certain times, for certain interviews.
Important people.
Important people, like Wayne Minnar.
I wondered why he keeps trying to arrest me.
But so that's the part of
did
the
I
job.
Did I really do that?
Well, hold on.
Did I really do that?
Hold on. Double
are you dramatizing
sword.
It?
No, you did that.
Oh, shit.
That's why you need Jesus, man.
Okay. Sorry.
No. Repent and then remember the things you do unto others. But the point is, that was the crappy part of working with him. But then for the next 3 hours, running order in the waste paper basket, you had the best time on radio. Absolutely the best time on radio. Why? Because it was what you guys do here. It was unscripted.
Yeah.
Still a little bit censored. You have to be a little bit more intelligent about how you get around things.
Right.
But it was, and there's that word again, it was authentic.
Yeah, but look, I'm the first to admit I'm not the easiest guy to work with in that respect, especially for people who like a little bit of order and sense and kind of
there's
pattern.
There's that OCD coming in as well.
No, it's true.
Does he touch the door handles here in this place, by the way?
Yeah, I do.
Does he walk around with a towel or a personal assistant to open doors?
I've got a bit better.
We do have a spray that he uses on his hands.
And on the microphone.
You don't have a spot. You should microphone. Actually just get a sponsorship, right? Whatever their brand is, with Gareth Cliff.
No, we had a lot of fun, though.
I mean, it was the best.
I remember us doing... Do you remember the whole Hansi saga? You brought Hansi up earlier.
We were on a road show.
Yeah, we were
heading
traveling
towards the Wild Coast sun, I think. And then the news came through.
And we got news that this is happening.
Before the days of Twitter, huh?
And you know what? You were very good because you always had a good sense of timing. Mm. And I sometimes still don't. And when it comes to death, I'm really not the most sensitive guy. Geez. So Hansi dies in this plane accident. Oh my God, you're wearing a Hansi Krenier shirt. That's hilarious. Did you do that on purpose? That's hilarious.
It was the first thing that was in my cupboard.
But it's Hansi
morning.
As Che Guevara.
There we go.
Wow.
What a rebel.
And Che Guevara. And he died. And I started saying, I sang a parody song about, you know, like.
And we were all going,
wait
a week.
With Elton John's song, Goodbye. You know, I did a whole thing.
Candle in the wind.
Yeah, exactly. And. I mean, it was really shocking and very insensitive. But I was also a kid. I was a stupid kid. And I thought that, you know, shocking people was the way to build an audience. And it got initial interest. But you can't always sustain that. And if you don't have something to back it up and you don't get into the stories, you don't actually pay attention to what's going on, eventually it just goes flat.
Yeah.
And sometimes you win, sometimes you lose as well. You take a gamble, right?
You see, and this is why we need people like you. In the space. And to a lesser, well, to a degree as well, why we need people like me in the space as well. Is when those two spirits come into the same space. They moderate each other.
Yeah.
But it's gotta be real. It's gotta be authentic. Can't be fake.
Yeah.
And I think the time we spent together, that was the case. It was real.
Yeah,
it was authentic.
I mean, I have very fond memories of it too. But when I'm, you catch me on a bad day, I'll go, no, it was a waste of time.
But you know it wasn't.
No. How's social media changed things for you?
I hate social media, to be honest with you.
Tell me why. What do you hate about it?
You know how hard it is to be interesting, topical, factual, and useful to mankind through social media. There aren't too many people.
Well, it's like trying to get clean drinking water out of sewage.
Yeah, and if I'm spending my whole life filtering and looking for, like you said earlier, the truth, I'd rather not.
Mm.
I'd rather not. It's,
so
it's,
do you participate?
It's hard for the average person out there to get into my head.
Yeah. In other words, do you let them in, or is it hard for them because you're difficult to understand?
They've got to say something really for them to get into my head. So if I've got to spend the whole day sorting, sifting through the wasteland to find the gem, that's all right.
Okay, but you still tweet.
Yeah, I do.
What do you use it for? Mostly promotional stuff for what you're doing in other media?
Pretty much. Whatever I'm busy with, this is what I'm doing. And it's a great tool to kind of put your thoughts out there.
Yeah.
Which is a complete contradiction to what I'm just saying now. But that's pretty much all that I use it for. I've got to catch up.
Listen to you. Here's on April the 6th. Udo Karlsson, please advise us up-and-coming golfers to refrain from blondes because the back problems you will experience will prevent you from winning majors for years. I'm glad Tiger's back. And you replied, so is it the hair color that causes back pain or hiding your indiscretions while holding the weight of perfection on your shoulders?
Boom!
Okay, alright.
Wow. I think Tiger should just have continued on his path of waitress after waitress after waitress, and the majors would still be there. If you are a shameless voyeuristic pervert, or in the case of Tiger, you just love schlumping.
I don't think I've ever heard that word before in my life. Schlumping.
If you like schlumping, schlump. If you need to schlump to win the Masters, to wear the green jacket, to pick up the claret jug, schlump.
Do what you need.
Done.
Give the winners what they need to win.
It's the social convention of I'm successful, I'm great at what I do, and in the case of golfers, now I need to find a beautiful blonde that I could get married to and settle down.
Have a kid or two.
Hopefully have a kid. And as it turned out, he had to buy a small little fjord, didn't he?
He had to buy an island half of Norway or
something.
There
we go.
Yeah.
Schlump, brah, yo. Short order cooks and waitresses.
Don't forget, they also have to be role models, hey? They have to.
To whom?
Well, this is
what I'm trying to get at. And it comes back to this word authentic.
Yeah.
Right? So you Tiger Woods, you've got the pressure of being the son of James Earl Jones lookalike, who is just this sort of model of piousness and competitiveness. And now you've got to prove something to your dad. It's cool. Become a grown up. Prove something to your dad, but you got nothing to prove to the world.
Mm.
You're a golfer. You hit the ball long.
Right.
You putt well. Do that.
It's like that time when.
Do that. Hold on, I'm not done yet.
Oh, because
so do that, right? And win as much as you can. And if your personality is the type that is actually role modelish, and you enjoy that, then don't loop. But if you just out there to play golf.
Mm.
Your extramural activities are not
important.
You're becoming
the first billion-dollar sports person by virtue of what you're doing.
Mm.
And you enjoy that. Then do that. If it means that the same place you go to for a burger after the round is also the place where you find your next sexual conquest, and that's what you want to do, schlump.
Yeah. Sure.
I can't remember if it was Michael Phelps or one of the other singers who was bust with marijuana. Swimmers.
Oh,
bust smoking marijuana or something.
Yeah.
And there were so many upset parents because they said, oh, but you know, my child looks up to you and this, that, and the other. And I agree with you 100%. They're not there to be
like
your
Michael
role
Phelps's
models.
Michael Phelps' eyes are always red and it's not the HDHD.
They're not there to be role models. They're there to, you know.
THC or HTS.
Yeah.
Take your pick.
Yeah.
What do you want, Alan Ford? Hello.
How are you?
Good morning.
Hello, you beautiful
people.
It's
a reunion.
Yeah, it's a little reunion.
It's such a lovely. So good to see you.
We've
got a whole show.
I saw you giving a big hello to Udo.
I haven't seen Udo for a while.
I can't not hug you when I see
I love you.
You know that.
It's like my mate.
Let's play your theme music, Al. It wouldn't be right otherwise.
Our times have changed. Hard times.
Yeah, but you guys haven't. I look at him.
Like, David, we're timeless, aren't we? We look fabulous.
I'm just going to go.
Now we are old.
Going to the toilet. No. You guys.
We look. Come on.
You know, he now used to do this, old. By the way. Yeah. He's, as he's doing
yes,
now.
Yes,
exactly.
Yes.
He's get
like
up
poor
and leave
Yvonne
us.
Chaka yep. Chaka the one morning. So we yep. on air. I do my bulletin. Now Yvonne's doing a link. Gareth literally got up from his chair. He took me by the shoulder and he walked out.
And then you just had
so
to.
So we're going
to
do
on.
The show now. Hey, what's new? How are you, Udo? How's it going? Seriously,
Adam
you
were just.
It's been 20 years and nothing's changed.
Nothing. Are you still reviewing restaurants live on air, bro?
I'm doing everything.
Free
yeah.
food.
I'm making
like Sunday afternoons. I'm a single man in Johannesburg.
Yeah.
I don't need to cook. Alan's got them.
Yeah.
Every single Sunday.
He's got you covered.
And when we did, and then I used to love because I missed the early morning show and used to wake up listening to you every early morning.
Yeah. Oh, gee, it was 4 to 6.
Boy, times have, listen, it's been 20 years in the business. How old are you now?
You're old. I know, I've got no shame about my age, bro. And on the 8th of June this year, I turned 40.
I know, we're all 40 in 1 year.
Sure.
Yeah, Gareth as well.
Gareth is
41.
August was Gareth. Alan was.
Can I just get a sense? Like how old are you guys?
Well, that's our baby over there. He's like 12.
No, but really,
23.
Fuck you, man.
Oh no.
No, really, fuck you.
We were that age. You can't swear like that. What's wrong with you? Where did you come from?
Gareth,
I just need to moisturize some more.
No,
I'll be
please
fine.
Don't. I think you got enough product right now.
And black don't
how
crack.
How old are you?
I'm 34.
What?
Yeah.
She still looks 12, but she still looks 12.
No, you do.
We're in our 40s.
Are you in the club?
Listen,
in the club.
I just counted. There's 7 urine cakes.
How?
What?
Wow. Sorry.
And what a urine cake.
This is turning left very quickly.
Down
the 7 urine cakes.
What a urine cake.
Don't you want to try to hit them with your pee stream? I try to hit all the urine cakes
with
my pee
stream. Are
you
really asking what a urine cake is?
No, I don't want to know.
Put the two together and figure it out.
Alan Ford. Urine cakes are in the urinals. They put those little.
Oh, things. Those cakes. Oh, those. But they actually.
It's a thing we use to test whether we have prostate cancer.
Oh.
No.
Yeah. No.
If you cannot dilute a section of a urine cake, you need to go and see your doctor.
Oh.
Really?
No, but you're 23.
I like
your prostate hasn't even begun developing yet.
I like the urinals that have ice. It's much nicer. You're the cream.
But you get splashbacks sometimes.
You do get splashbacks.
So
no, not if ice. You don't.
I must say, it's lovely seeing
what
you.
What a delight.
I know
his contrast makes it melt quickly.
I know you came here just to promote your show.
Yes, so. I'm here to punt the show. Great show lined up today.
And he still writes it out in an A4 with Cokie. After all this time.
Gary's Cokie. Well, it's obviously the unview, the thin, the rich, and the fabulous. I don't know who's thin and who's rich. But I'm certainly fabulous, darling. That's one thing I can tell you. All right, we've got Ashley Dowd and Joe De Silva, two top actors. They've got a new show called Fatal Attraction. They're coming into studio. Such a fool. They're coming into studio for their new show. And of course, Ashley from SABC 3. And Gareth. He's never done this seriously ever before.
Go on.
Okay.
Tell us more about
then
your show.
Then we've got the puppet guy, Conrad Koch, coming onto the show.
Hey, the exploiter of colored puppets.
Which is going to
yes.
be brilliant.
Yes.
We've got Rudolf Landsman.
He's been abusing colored people for a long time.
Ages. But have you noticed Chester's a little bit more grey than cream these days?
He's changed.
Yeah.
He unraced him.
Like
basically.
He untanned or something.
Yeah. He transraced.
Can I finish my show
line? And he actually sounds more Afrikaans than coloured now. Yeah. Anyway, sorry, Alan.
And then we have Rudolf Landsman, who will be on your show next week for the full hour. But
yes.
She launches her new book, Tell Me Your Story.
Yes.
Of course, the top Rudolf Landsman. And then Dwayne Alexander, phenomenal new story. Lambda, the Musical Theatre Academy, opens in Cape Town with some of the best in musical theatre. So they. Go on.
Alan Ford, I appreciate you.
Get out of here. Go and get your show ready.
It's good to see you.
It is good to see Udo.
It's so good to see
and
you.
And he's
looking fabulous.
Yeah, he's looking good. He's
and looking hot, actually.
He's got tons of experience under the belt now, so he's. And I mean under the belt. How many marriages?
Oh, just whoa. One.
Sure. One marriage. Do you know I popped out the closet, by the way?
Jesus Christ. popped out of the closet.
All I want to know is how the hell did you get into
broke
it in the first place?
Broke the door down with a fanfare and dancing.
Even Stevie Wonder could see that.
No, they couldn't. You didn't.
I had to think I bought him a straight porn DVD once upon a time.
You did, actually.
It was the most ironic gift that
you
I've
did.
Ever bought anybody.
He bought me porn. Uda.
That's a good friend.
In a joking way or serious?
No, I thought you needed it.
Oh.
Like somebody needs Jesus.
Oh.
Wow. Oh, how right. Times have reminded me of things.
Thank you.
I'll be seeing you.
Thank
great
you,
seeing you.
Have all a great day.
I don't know about this going down memory lane thing anymore.
Well, we've gone to some controversial places this morning, Udo.
Have you?
Yeah, this whole cipher discussion. You've explained it to me.
I'm hoping you've got the context.
And in the context of FIFA and how actually, why would you want to change a corrupt system if you can benefit from it? Now I understand why these guys are such douchebags.
Aim for the highest position.
Never
possible
made sense
there.
To me. Your Tiger Woods explanation, superb.
Schlump.
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 You want to be a good sportsman? Do whatever you want off the field. Nobody cares. All these people who are trying to be role models. My buddy says it's a waste of time. You agree?
Thank you.
Dumb position. Mm. Yeah. And you are now busy at the SABC.
Yes.
Are they looking after you there?
They've always looked after me. I mean,
heard it's getting really better. It's where people are starting to. The
I've,
board
I've
is
been
better.
Back there now for what is it? 3 years? Just over 3 years, right? What I have seen, and there's been some ugliness. Thanks
sure.
to a particular individual.
Claudio Montsvenet.
What I've seen in the last year and a half are people really trying to think differently in terms of how they put out what they put out. What I'm seeing is a much greater insistence of quality over just doing.
Mm-hmm.
What I've seen as well is a number of people who are responsible for looking after budgets being a lot more vigilant.
Okay.
Which can only be a good thing.
That's very good.
And
because we don't want to bail them out again.
Yeah, and even though one of the changes has impacted directly on me in terms of the radio thing that I was doing for the last 6 months.
Yeah. Because they shuffled deck.
Yeah, yeah,
the
they reshuffled.
Again, right.
And the changes that have been happening, that are happening, I think are most necessary. What we just need to be careful about as an organization is if you're a new broom responsible for a department, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater.
Yeah.
Don't change just for change's sake. In fact, maybe what is needed is an audit of people who are adding value. I don't know how you measure that.
That would be nice.
I don't know how you measure that. But
if the SABC's ever got that right, the results would be very surprising.
Because there are some amazing people in
there
the
are.
Twin Towers.
But isn't it amazing how they don't even need management to do the right thing? It actually works better when there aren't any managers. Mm. It's the weirdest. I remember Mubs when there wasn't a board, there wasn't a CEO. Things worked really well for that 3-4 months.
Are there still a lot of acting executives?
Yeah.
That's also problematic.
You know what? It's complicated. It's. I often think of it in the context of its own history.
Mm.
The SABC was this state-owned, state-run propaganda machine during the apartheid era. For a little while, after 1994, people had this idea that it might become like a really powerful public service platform, which would help people, would advance the public interest, and for a while it looked like it might, and then there was a succession of good and bad CEOs after that, and then it just became what it was before because a dinosaur, big brontosaurus,
but
is a difficult thing to
steer. What does it show you? And it goes back to a theme we picked up on earlier. No matter how much chaos they may be looking from the outside in terms of critical mass of support, it's unrivaled still.
Yeah.
In the South African market.
It's a monster.
You've been doing things differently for the longest while now.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of the critical mass that support, the national broadcaster is still unrivaled. And I would like to think that it's because people believe that things are going to change.
Well,
if you can't be hopeful,
keep
what can
hope
you
alive, do? As Dr. Martin Luther King said.
Or schlump.
Or schlump, if you've got a schlump, as Udo Karlsson said.
Thank you.
Thank you, Udo. Pleasure to see you again. And we'll catch up again soon. I hope it won't take another 8 years
next
or whatever.
Next time, just call, bro.
Yeah, well.
What's
I don't even know if I've. Let me get your number.
Still ends in 702.
Really?
After all this time.
Did you change it?
No.
No.
What the hell for?
Okay.
It's just a number.
All right. No, it's fine. I think Alan Ford's does too. All right. Thanks very much. Udo Karlsson, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow between 6 and 9. Have a good day and blah, blah, blah.
This is CliffCentral.com.